John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. Don't forget, tonight at 8 o'clock, you'll be able to tune in for Big Orange Hotline, courtesy of the Vol Network, as that'll be Bob Kessling, Pat Ryan, and Jeff Francis giving their thoughts on the game that was and what's to come as Tennessee took care of Tennessee Tech in a big way and now gets ready for first road trip of the season, Jimmy, to Gainesville and first conference action.
Yeah, it's going to be a challenge, no doubt about it. Florida played really good, well against Alabama, and they went toe-to-toe with them after falling behind 21-3. They outplayed the Crimson Tide. But there are teams that have Alabama letdowns. We'll see if Florida's one of them. Could this be momentum that they carry? Or could it be, man, we just missed this and hard to get back and play and you beat up a little bit? So who knows what will happen? But I know the odds makers favor. I've seen Florida favored between 16.5 points and 22. Wow. So, yeah. So we'll see. I was asked earlier, well, which one's more accurate? I'm like, well, if I knew that, I'd be in Vegas.
That's right.
But I don't know which one's more accurate. But I'd
be hanging with Wayne Newton. Yeah,
there you go. That's right.
So, Donkey Shane, Jimmy.
Oh, man. It's a long ago reference.
So, some you have to dust off just for yourself.
Oh yeah, but it'll be a challenge. Look, Florida's a really good football team, and I think Dan Mullen's a really good football coach.
Right now, though, it's your chance to win. It's the Sports Fix at 6, and Jimmy, we have one of our very favorite prizes to give away up for grabs.
Yeah, a $25 gift card from Proper Popcorn. They're located at 9700 Kingston Pike. They got a new location at 29 Market Square. This is a classic concept reimagined, not just a popcorn shop. It's an experience, and you can choose from over 50 handcrafted small-batch popcorn flavor combinations. Perfect place for family outing, date night, or getting a gift for a loved one. $25 gift card to Proper Popcorn. If you can answer this trivia question, Clemson has gone 10 years in a row winning at least 10 games. There are two programs that have won 10 games in consecutive seasons even longer than Clemson. Name the two. Clemson's won 10 games 10 years in a row. Name the two programs that have won 10 games and more seasons in a row than just 10. This could be a current streak or it could be an older streak.
656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. We start with Mark. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Mark.
Hey, guys. How's it going today?
Doing well. Hope you are.
Yes, sir. Doing pretty good. I'm going to take a shot and say Alabama, Ohio State.
You started strong. You're half right.
Oh, okay. Maybe it'll help somebody else, guys. Have a good evening. Thank you.
You too, Mark. Thank you very much. And let's see. Up next, it would be TJ who joins us. Hello, TJ.
Hey, let's say Alabama and Georgia.
It is not Georgia.
All right. Thank you.
Have a great night, TJ. We go next to Gary. Hi, Gary. How are you?
I'm great, John. How are you doing, sir?
Doing fine, thank you.
Well, good. I think it's Alabama, and Bobby Bowden did it at Florida State, I believe.
You are exactly correct.
Oh, look at that, Gary.
Nice job. He sure did. He had 14 years in a row where they were like in the top five in the country, which is also a remarkable streak. But you nailed it. Alabama's had 13 consecutive 10-win seasons. That's a current streak. And Florida State had 14 in a row. So, hey, Gary, you have won a $25 gift card to Proper Popcorn. Good job. We're going to put you on hold and get that prize to you.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Oh, outstanding work. We know you'll enjoy it. So hang on the line so we can get your information. And we appreciate everyone that called and to participate in tonight's Sports Fix at 6. Jimmy, how weird is it that you have a weekend where both Clemson and Ohio State win and yet each slip in the Associated Press poll?
Yeah, in the lowest in their rankings in quite a while for each of them. Clemson not impressive in a 14-8 win over Georgia Tech. Ohio State not impressive in a 40-21 win. I guess it was over Tulsa. Could have been 41-20. The defense at Ohio State's not very good. They changed the defensive play call.
They pulled away late in that one.
Yeah, so that they have not played defensively like I think a lot of people thought they would. I think many people felt it would be a much improved or a much better defense than what they have shown so far. So, yeah, that's pretty odd to see that with those two programs. Just a couple of other quick notes. the PGA golf season has started, and out of Napa, California, Max Homa won the tournament. He shot 19 under, but the story locally was Scott Stallings. Scott Stallings was actually tied for the lead during the final round, and he ended up tied for six, and it was a five-way tie for six. He shot 13 under par, but an outstanding performance by Scott Stallings in the season opening tournament. And then tying for 22nd was Peter Malnati. He was 10 under. He shot a 68 in the final round. Next up on the PGA Tour, the Ryder Cup. And we'll see how the USA team fares at Whistling Straits. Also, a couple other notes. The WNBA, the eight teams advancing to the playoffs, they start on Thursday. And we didn't really hit on the NFL, but what a big win it was for the Titans. They trail Seattle 30-16 in the fourth quarter. They rallied to get the win. Randy Bullock hit a 36-yard field goal to win that game in overtime. I thought Russell Wilson was tackled for a safety. They didn't give him a safety. They called forward progress.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I didn't agree with that call. I thought that was a safety. And
would have been nice to see a walk-off safety.
Yeah, and he's got the ball hanging out here, but when he wheeled around to throw it, he's in the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how they call forward progress on that.
Right.
I didn't agree with that call at all. But Derrick Henry, 35 carries, 182 yards, three touchdowns. That's his fourth game with at least 175 yards and three touchdowns. That's tied for the second most. He also caught five or six passes.
Yes, he was utilized very well as a receiver, especially late when they were trying to make that game-tying drive to catch him at 30. I guess maybe the Titans got the memo a week late in terms of the start of the season.
Yeah. Well, they sure, and to be down, I don't think Seattle had lost a game at home when they were up by 14 in the fourth quarter. I don't think that had ever happened.
They were undefeated.
There was one quick thing I want to touch on. I'm a stickler for clock management, and I know you could debate this one. There's 32 seconds left, and there's a penalty. So the Titans have two timeouts left. They can either have a 10-second runoff, have the ball on the one-yard line with 22 seconds left. I think it was first and goal. And two timeouts, or they could call a timeout and get the ball with 39 seconds. And I'm thinking, I'm not calling a timeout. I got two timeouts. I'll take it with 22 seconds because I ain't giving Russell Wilson a chance. But they elected to take the timeout, and they scored with 29 seconds. And I thought, gosh, I wonder if that's too much for Russell Wilson. It ended up not being. So Baltimore beating Kansas City 36-35. Lamar Jackson getting the monkey off his back. What a phenomenal performance by Jackson last night. 239 passing and a touchdown, ran for 107, two touchdowns, and also got that key fourth down conversion late.
Yeah, and to think his night started with two picks, including a pick six in the first three series, that was what to me was so impressive because you've got this bugaboo. He was 0-3 against Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes. Baltimore had lost four straight to the Chiefs, and to have the night start that way and then finish the way they did, that was really impressive.
A couple of quick notes. Dallas beat the Chargers on a 56-yard field goal by Greg Zuerlein. Dallas actually set up the field goal instead of trying to get closer. They thought, 56-yard, what the hell? He made it. But
yes.
I'm like, what are you doing? Try to get a little closer. Arizona defeats Minnesota 34-33 on a missed 37-yard field goal at the end of that game. Kyler Murray, 400 yards, passing and five touchdowns he accounted for. And then Tampa Bay, 48-25 over Atlanta. Brady, five touchdown passes. He's got 9-2 games. His fourth straight game with at least four touchdowns. And I heard this. This is remarkable. Tampa Bay's the first team ever to score at least 30 points in a row and win all nine games.
Yes.
Scored 30 points, nine games in a row, and win them all. Wow. That's pretty impressive. And the Saints took the week off. So I don't know what happened to them, but they lost. Beat Green Bay. Let's celebrate.
Oh, my goodness. That was really, I did not see that turnaround coming.
Well, I followed them enough to where I was concerned, but they had eight coaches out. They had a player or so out, and I thought, this is not good for them coming out of this. So, yeah. So I expect them to play a lot better this week, but, boy, they laid an egg against Carolina. So.
Yeah, and then you have the week concluding tonight as it is Green Bay and Detroit. Both teams 0-1. Packers are favored by 11.5. Green Bay leads the all-time series, and this is something. It's the 182nd meeting between the two, and Green Bay has 102 wins. Green Bay 102 wins. Detroit has 72, and there have been seven ties. Packers have won the last four, and including their most recent meeting, which was 42-21. And then getting back to what I think might be the leader in the clubhouse for outstanding reply from an NFL head coach in a day after press conference, Mike Vrabel, head coach of the Titans. He was asked about the crowd noise in Seattle. He asked back, at the beginning or at the end?
That's pretty good.
That's well done and very well executed. We head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline as we get to say hello to Gerald Hodges, SEC replay official, as he joins us for the remainder of the show. His appearance brought to you by A.G. Hines Company, providing building materials since anyone can remember. Gerald, how are you?
Doing fine. And is a human on the other line I'm talking to.
That's right. And just think how many times we have to check these days that say, yes, indeed, I am not a robot.
Yeah, you have to click the box.
Yes. But anyhow, Gerald, always appreciate your time. How was your weekend?
A good weekend. Actually, a good weekend. Very nice. Weather was nice. A few glitches on some flights, but we made it.
Gerald, I do want to revisit with you that we were just talking about, that Mississippi State-Memphis game. So you had an official that did start to signal that the ball was dead. When you do that, is the process that you're blowing your whistle at the same time that you do that?
That is normally, yes. That's normally the procedure, is when you give a signal, you blow the whistle at the same time. Because maybe everybody's not looking at the signal. Of course, they're looking at blockers or the ball or whatever. And then it should go simultaneous, the signal and the whistle.
Now, if I remember the statement from the SEC correctly, that could have been reviewed by the replay official. Is that correct?
That's a reviewable play in several different ways. It was a scoring play, so... the replay can review all scoring plays, all turnovers, change of possessions. Anytime there's a change of possession, however, interception, fumble, whatever.
Now, an official throwing a beanbag has absolutely nothing to do with stopping play, because a beanbag is typically thrown when there is a change of possession. Punt return, interception return, whatever. Isn't that correct?
That is. The beanbag, Jimmy, is to mark the spot of whatever, spot of the fumble, on a run back. It's the spot where the kick ends, which is a very important spot, because if you have foul, depending on which team the foul was on, then you go to that spot, if it's behind that spot or at that spot. So that's a very important spot. And also the spot of a fumble, say if you have roughing the passer and the receiver catches the ball and runs ever how many yards and hit and fumbles, then the penalty is tacked on to where that run ends. And believe it or not, if a teammate picks it up and runs further and fumbles, it's penalized from the spot of the last run. So roughing the passer is a pretty major penalty, especially on a completion.
Now, also in regard to downing a ball, and I thought it was pretty close as to whether the player from Mississippi State had downed it, but if you have your hand on the ball and walk away and the ball is not moving, that would be considered down, wouldn't it?
Typically, a ball at rest or nearly at rest and touched, not just touch, because say he moves it, I didn't see exactly how that thing went down, but basically if it's on the ground and at rest and you kind of touch it and pin it, that typically would consider be, down in the ball.
Okay. If you have a question or comment for Gerald, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Let's check in with Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hey, guys. I also had a question about the Mississippi State game. There was also two number fours on the field at the same time. Is that reviewable also?
Yes, it is. And believe me, Eric, that is one of the hardest things to catch on a football field. It really is.
Right.
because you can have a lineman, say, at number four. You can have a safety at number four. On offense, you can have a tackle, at, you know, on punts especially because there are numbering exceptions. And you have different officials on the field looking at different positions on the field. So typically an official that's key is the wideout or a gunner on a punt. Yeah, that's his key. And, of course, the interior linemen are basically the center judges and the umpires. And especially on punts, you can have any combination of numbers because you don't have to have 5 through 79 on the line of scrimmage. It's called an exception to the numbering rule on punts. So, and typically in most cases, this is one that's been debated back and forth, typically no one really gains an advantage, especially on punt play or something like that. And so there's a lot of discussion about, one, just eliminating duplicate numbers when they assign numbers. You've got actually you got zero now. So you have 0 through 99, and that's 100 players, you know. And yeah. But in today's world, you know, a lot of the recruits, heavily recruited recruits, mm-hmm. insist on wearing a certain number. And so, you know, they kind of relent to that. You just have to be careful. And we actually go over that in the replay booth, just looking. There's several other reasons we look. There are different numbers, especially if you have an unsportsmanlike or an ejection some sort. You know, we need to know the name of that player and what position. And typically, they have one on offense and one on defense. But when you do have special team plays, that's when it could happen. It is unbelievably hard to distinguish that.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yes, Eric, sir.
Thank you.
Joe, what's the penalty for having duplicate numbers on the field at the same time?
Well, it's not enough. It's 5 yards from the previous spot, you know, so in replay the down. So, but, you know, there again, when it rears its ugly head, it's usually a major deal. So
Mississippi State could have accepted the penalty on Memphis and then repunted.
Right, repunted, or I don't know what the down and distance was. It could have resulted in a first down.
Yeah, I don't either. That's a good point. Yeah,
they had the option, of course, to go to the previous spot. And, you know, and then re-kick it. So,
yeah,
it's interesting. And it happens, you know, there again, you see it sometime later, you know, during the week. Somebody, we had number twos on there. And like I said, typically it's not a major deal. Nobody really gains an advantage, but it'd just be simpler either to clean it up and to say, don't issue duplicate numbers, or just, you know, take it out of the foul category. Make it a warning or something, you know. So
Tennessee had duplicate numbers on a punt return against Tennessee Tech. It was not detected. I think, like you said, it's hard to see that, but they had duplicate numbers on a particular punt return. So,
well, did that help Tennessee score 56 points?
Yes, it did. I think it'd been 49-0 if not for – no, I don't know.
Let's get a call from Steve. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Steve.
Hello. I just had a question about the – I watched the Mississippi State-Memphis game, and there was a review of an onside kick. It looked like the review was to see if the ball had gone 10 yards, and the ball actually looked like it did go 10 yards. But when they reviewed the play, they saw an illegal block on a Mississippi State player. Mississippi State was the one that kicked the onside kick, and they called a penalty on the illegal block and never made a comment on whether the ball had gone 10 yards. And the commentators said that they thought it had gone 10 yards. I don't know if it is legal for an official to call a penalty on a review after the fact, when they're reviewing if the ball had gone 10 yards.
Good question.
Yes, Steve, the way the replay rule reads, once the replay official gets into a play, he has to review every aspect of the play. You know, so one, did it go 10 yards? And remember, the kicking team cannot block the receiving team before the ball either goes 10 yards or it's touched by the receiver. So, in other words, they can't block until they're eligible to recover the ball, which that either it either goes 10 yards or touched by the receiver. So they have to look at all those aspects. And once we get into it, you have to look at all the, and that's the same thing on any, you know, any turnover. You know, you may look at a punt return to see if the runner going down the sideline stepped out of bounds. And in the meantime, when he's running down the sideline, you say, uh-oh, there's a blindside block. Well, then that's another one that we actually can call create from the replay.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Sure do appreciate it, Steve. Thank you. Our guest, SEC replay official Gerald Hodges, his appearance brought to you by A.G. Hines Company, providing building materials since anyone can remember. And why don't we go ahead and get back to the phones? And it's John who joins us next. Hello, John. Good evening.
Good evening, gentlemen. I always enjoy Mr. Hodges being on the show. I had a question about the lost down situation at Penn State. And actually, it was about, in that same series, a play that led to the confusion for the lost down. Earlier in the series, first down, Penn State was charged with an intentional grounding. And the play was, the Penn State quarterback dropped back, was not under any pressure at all. He threw about a 40-yard pass down the right hash mark. And what happened is, his receiver obviously broke off the play, so they were on the wrong page. And the ball landed about 20 yards beyond everybody, and the call was made for intentional grounding. And so a couple of things. First of all, is that reviewable? I don't think it is. And second of all, can there be intentional grounding if the quarterback is under no pressure at all? He's not scrambling. He's under no pressure, and after he threw the ball, Auburn player, no one laid a hand on him. And I thought that was an interesting intentional grounding call. And, of course, that was a loss of down, and that led to the confusion later in the series on the down situation.
Sure. Okay. We'll start with the intentional grounding. The way the rule reads is if you throw the ball into an area where there is no eligible receiver, and that could be up to and including hitting an offensive lineman. That used to be offensive pass interference, illegal touching. It's really nothing anymore. But to be able to throw the ball into an area where there is no eligible receiver, you have to be outside the tackle box. Now, I don't know where that was, but that's the rule. So
no, he was, there are, no, he was not out. Yeah, he was not outside the tackle box. He was in the pocket.
Okay. All right. By strictly the rule, you have to be either outside the tackle box, plus the ball has to go past the line of scrimmage, which obviously that is in that field.
Right.
And there's some leeway, I guess, if the official's absolutely sure that, you know, they run the wrong route, which that can happen. But by the letter of the rule, to throw it like that anywhere where there's no player, you have to be outside the tackle box.
Do you have to be under duress?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
You can chuck it up in the stands if you get out there. And you'll see that a lot, especially in the pros. You know, if they see the coverage just got everybody blank, they'll run out and just heave it up in the first row. But that's pretty much the way it is. But the other thing is, I'd almost say 100% of the time, if there is a mistake in the down count, it always involves a loss of down foul, because that kind of upsets everything. Sometimes, a lot of times, though, when you have a loss of down foul and they lose a down, they end up giving the team five, as in Colorado, Missouri back several years ago. They got five.
Oh, yeah, that famous play, yeah.
Well, see, Gerald, what didn't make any sense to me was this was a loss of down, and they still only gave them three. So
I know, yeah.
So usually, if it's lost a down and you screw it up, you get five downs, not three. So it was almost they got penalized two downs.
That's correct. Evidently, that's what happened. But that's when that happened. So
intentional grounding is not reviewable.
I'm sorry.
Is intentional grounding reviewable?
No, intentional grounding is not reviewable. But the downs are reviewable. In the replay manual, the replay official can review the down count. And it says, especially if it involves a loss of down penalty, they can review that up until the ball is snapped for the next series. So, but that is a reviewable play in the manual.
All right. Well, very good. Thank you very much for that explanation.
John, have a great night. Thank you.
And Gerald, James Franklin was arguing like heck on that play. And how they didn't review that and correct that, it mystifies me because he was pointing it out, and that should have been reviewed. I think the SEC sent out a statement later acknowledging there was an error.
Let's go next. Go ahead.
Yeah, probably.
All right, let's go to John. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well. You?
Good. Two things real quick. The first, you might have already addressed this, but I chimed in a little bit late. How, in the Titans game, how was it not a safety on Russell Wilson when he threw that ball from the end zone?
That's what I thought. They call forward progress. And I'm calling bunk.
Where? He was in the end zone.
Yeah. Well, when there was first contact, you could argue he might have been on the foot line, but he spun around to get out of the tackle. Now, there is no way in the world there was forward progress stopped. There is no way. That's not even close. But that's what they ruled, and I'm with you. I thought it was a safety. I really thought they missed that call.
Yeah, and I guess my question was, I saw a bunch Saturday, a lot of, I know Joe, this is a joke, but I know Joe Milton wasn't playing, but there was a lot of overthrows in a lot of college games, and a couple of them, they still called pass interference. I guess my question is, at what point does the ref say that ball is uncatchable, or does it depend on the contact?
Daryl?
Basically, on an uncatchable ball, that is purely a judgment call by the covering officials. They do, from time to time, get help from their other officials downfield. Of course, typically it's on a long pass to cover uncatchable. Their kind of guidelines is pretty much on the sideline pass. If the ball hits in the white, and, you know, literally with the athletes today, they could jump, I mean, just crazy. If it hits in the white, there's a good chance, and the way the rule reads, if there's any doubt, then the ball is catchable. So, pass down the sidelines, it hits in the white, and if there's contact or, you know, basically interference there, then that's probably a good chance it will be called. It hits behind the bench or something like that. And sometimes the official will be concentrating on the two players, the defensive back and the receiver. And the ball may be high, and the procedure in that is for one of the other covering officials to come to him and say, hey, that ball is uncatchable. And you'll see that. You'll see him pick a flag up that it's uncatchable. But they are also cautioned when you go tell that other official to pick his flag up, you better be daggone sure it's uncatchable. So. But that's the rule on it.
All right, so, thank you, guys. Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes, sir. All right.
John, sure to appreciate the call. And as you, Gerald, you think about a scenario where you have a quarterback that is dropping back into the end zone. What normally has to happen for him to get the benefit of the doubt as opposed to marking progress halted at a specific point as opposed to maybe the momentum of the play carrying him into the end zone or perhaps being pushed back into the end zone or spinning out of a tackle, as Jimmy described.
Yeah, that is tough. And also, that just for information, that a forward progress spot is not reviewable. So, but it's a judgment. But if he's going forward, trying to gain yardage, and then it's pushed back, then he's going to get forward progress. But if he runs up and, like you said, maybe spins out of a tackle or runs sideways, then, you know, it's doubtful that, you know, he'll get forward progress unless he gets back out again. So, but there again, all plays around the goal line, whether coming in or going out, are magnified, obviously, because that's the whole point of the game is the goal line.
Time getting away from us, but we do have time for one quick call, and that is from Mac. Hello, Mac.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Doing well. Hope you are.
Just a quick question, Gerald. Is the fair catch, free kick rule still in the rule book, and have you ever seen it implemented?
I have seen it. It is not in the rule. You talking about line up and kick a field goal after a fair catch?
Yes.
That is out of the rule book. It was at one time. I have never seen it. I understand back when it was in the rule, Ken Sparks at Carson Newman actually did that and kicked the field goal up because he was up on the roof.
Okay. Good deal. Thank you so much.
It is a rule in the NFL. Yes, you can do it in the NFL, and in certain high school federations, you can do it as well. There are certain high schools that do approve that. Yeah.
So don't confuse me, Jimmy. I have enough trouble on Saturday.
I was trying to confuse Mac, not you.
Yeah, I think I know the Mac that was, too. I used to referee with him.
Oh, okay.
He was a good one.
Okay.
But one quick thing, if you got a second.
Yeah.
Anybody that wants to get into any type of officiating, just for some numbers, the game I had this week had 186 plays. You have 8 officials, so that's 1,488 decisions. In the game, that's average of 52 decisions per minute that they have to watch. And the replay official gets to watch all those, plus they count the players every play. So just something to think about. There's a lot going on that field, and they're not all stationary.
Yeah,
just a bit.
We have less than a minute, Gerald, but I saw in the Alabama-Florida game, well, I'm not supposed to mention the game, I guess, there was an attempted fair catch on a kickoff in the end zone by a player who bobbled it and rolled out of bounds on the 1 yard line. They gave the team the ball on the 1. On a fair catch situation on the kickoff, you have to actually catch the ball before you get the ball on the 25, correct?
That's correct. And also, Jimmy, really quick, if one player signals for a fair catch and muffs the ball and another one catches it, you know, or recovers it, they get it where the recovery is. It has to be a completed fair catch to get it back on the 25. That's exactly right.
All right.
Gerald, we always appreciate it. Thank you so much. Have a great week. Safe travels, and we'll talk to you next Monday.
That sounds great. Good to talk to you guys.
All right. Thank you. SEC replay official Gerald Hodges joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. His appearance brought to you by A.G. Hines Company, providing building materials since anyone can remember.